pretty cool start.
Vayelech Moshe Vayedaber as the Devarim Eilal Kol Yisrael. Moshe went and he spoke these words to Bnei Yisrael. So Vayelech is strange. What does it mean he went somewhere? So the Ramban says very simply, because last week's parsha is Atem Nitzavim Hayom, you're all standing in front of me. They're all standing with Moshe Rabbeinu. The pasuk didn't need to say that they all went home. Obviously they all went home. Each shevet went back to their places and everything. And Moshe Rabbeinu on that day, the same day that he was going to die, on that day, Vayelech Moshe, Moshe went to every shevet and asked Rishus from them, do you guys mind if I die today? He asked Rishus, are you guys okay with that? He asked Rishus to go. So it's strange. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Parsha Nitzavim, they made Nasifa. They made a near Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was willing to call the people together for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's sake. But for his own sake? Listen, it's a Nevis of Moshe Rabbeinu. For my sake, to be able to ask everybody. You know, and they were all there anyway. So for him to say at the very end, and by the way, guys, I'm going to die tonight. Are you guys okay with that? He said, no, that was for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When he wanted to do it for himself, for his own personal reasons, in Shiltum B'Yom HaMavis, you can't have any rulership on the day of death. So therefore, he sent them all away, and then he went over to them to go by them and to go tell them everything they needed to know. That way, he'd also said to Rabbeinu B'chai, he also got schar halicha from this. He at least got some type of schar halicha. He went ahead and he walked, you know? He went ahead and he got something out of it. It's a whole big thing about that. But how did Moshe know he was going to die? How do you have any idea that he was going to die? Nobody's supposed to know. It's a Gemara and Shabbos and Daf Lamed and Aleph. No one's supposed to know the day of their death. David Melech asked for it. David Melech said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, tell me when I'm going to die. And Hashem said, nobody can know the day of their death. He quoted a pasuk. Yeah. So how is it possible for Moshe Rabbeinu to be able to know the day of his death? So in Parshas Vayechi, there's an Orach Chaim. The Orach Chaim says about Yaakovinu, such an unbelievable word. He says, Yaakovinu had, you have on your body a certain amount of nitzotos, of sparks of Kedusha. Those sparks sit there on your body. Think of them like a light bulb, like a clear light bulb. If you're metakin the day and everything goes well, then the light bulb lights up. If you don't do well that day, then the light bulb darkens. Right, so you'll know if a tzaddik will be able to look at himself and see which nitzotos are lit up and which nitzotos are not sparkling, not there. He'll also be able to see how many more nitzotos he has left, how many days he has left in this world. Yaakovinu was able to look at his nitzotos and saw exactly when he was going to die, and he's able to say, oh, this is when I'm going to die. And he was able to call over the brothers, the shvatim, and be able to say to them, this is what I have to do. But the Orach Chaim says in parentheses, that's the reason why when a person dies, he gets weaker and weaker. Because the more nitzotos that you have, the more strength you have. The less nitzotos that are the nitzotos that are already used, it makes you weaker and weaker. So that the end of your days is very, very weak, except the last one is very strong. That's why a person always gets a little bit stronger right before they die. They always get a little bit up and then thrown right back down. That's what the Orach Chaim says. Okay. I definitely understand that. But there's another Orach Chaim in this week's Parsha. The Orach Chaim says in this week's Parsha that 40 days before a person dies, your neshama leaves you. Whether you want to call it the neshama yisera, it says, nishmasa adam holeches mianu. It goes away from a person. Like they say in Sher Shirim, venaswat slalom. Everything goes away from the person. So tzaddikim are able to tell. They can tell 40 days before he dies, they know, oh, my neshama yisera has just left me. I know I don't have the neshama yisera anymore. He's going to know that completely. He'll be able to figure that out. But normal people are not able to know. But even normal people, on the day of your death, there is a part of the neshama that definitely leaves. And when that part of the neshama leaves, then a person knows without a question he's going to die that day. I've just heard a story about the Bir Yaakov. That Bir Yaakov realized that he was going to die on one day, one certain day on a Shabbos, and he said, no, I don't have time yet. And he pushed himself off until the next Monday to be able to go do whatever tikkunim that he had to do over the next 2 days. But he knew, like when he was making Kiddush, I believe the story is that the candle fell, and he said, oy vey, not now. Well, he's in the middle of Kiddush. And he had to go ahead and he had to push it off by another 2 days to be able to make sure that that was about the time. Regardless, that's the pshat behind lo uchal latzis v'lavo. The next pasuk by Yom Elayim, that may have asked from Shana Anochi, Ayom lo uchal od latzis v'lavo, I can't go anymore. What do you mean, can't go? He's still strong as anything, Moshe Rabbeinu. There's no question about that. Look in Zosa Bracha. He had still the strength to go run around. He ran around to all Klal Yisrael. Definitely had the strength. So what does it mean? He doesn't have the strength in Torah anymore. Nistatmu heimenu mayanos hachachma misora. Misoros Mayonis HaChachman, he lost the wisdom that he had. That's what it means. He got knocked down and thrown down to the point where he couldn't learn anymore, because on that day your neshama leaves you and you don't have as much kiddush anymore. You don't have enough panemius anymore. So you lose it completely and you're out. That's completely gone. That's the pshat by Yelech Moshe. That really part of Moshe Rabbeinu went away. The neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu went away and it wasn't there anymore. And then Moshe Rabbeinu realized, I gotta go. I gotta go to everybody in Klal Yisrael and ask them for Rishus to be able to go ahead. And the Daza Kingdom says it's a medrash.
Why is he asking Rishus again?
He's asking Rishus for that. Well, anytime. Whenever somebody is nifter from another person, whenever you leave another person, you should ask Rishus before you go. Something that we're not makbid on, but a person should always go up to another person and say, do you mind if I go this, or do you mind if I do that, or whatever it is. A person should always do that. Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching us halacha ledoros that a person is supposed to do that.
Right.
Moshe Rabbeinu was a little busy on this day. Aside from the fact that he called together Nitzavim, that he said Parshas Hazinu, and Bayelech, he went to every Shevet, he also wrote 13 Sifrei Torah. 13 Sifrei Torah. Das HaKenim says 12 of them went to all the 12 Shvatim. 13th went to the Malachim and Shemayim, and they read from it every Monday and Thursday. Could you think of a bigger Pala of a Medrash? How in the world do you write 13 Sifrei Torah in your lifetime, let alone in one day? And aside from that, didn't Moshe Rabbeinu die on Shabbos? We say Tzidkoscha by Mincha on Shabbos because that's when Moshe Rabbeinu died. So if you say Tzidkoscha then, that means he died on Shabbos. How is he writing Sifrei Torah on Shabbos? And I realize one question should answer the other. If he wrote 13 Sifrei Torah, it's obviously Ma'aseh Nisim. Ma'aseh Nisim can happen on Shabbos and there's no problem with that whatsoever. Okay, but still, it's strange. And the Rush says that Moshe Rabbeinu died on Erev Shabbos because he wrote the 13 Sifrei Torah on Shabbos. So the Rush was not bothered by that Kasha. The Rush was not bothered by that Kasha at all. So what kind of a thing is it? Well, just what's shot behind this altogether? So Rav Olson has a nice thing over here. He says, a Sefer Torah contains all the neshamos of Klal Yisrael.
Right.
The pshat behind Moshe Rabbeinu writing the 13 Sifrei Torah is that he wrote down, he was able to be metaken the letter of every Jew. He's able to be metaken everything that needed to be done in every tikkun of every Gilgal of every Jew that was ever going to be. That's what he's doing. 13 Sifrei Torah for the 13 Shvatim technically. For Ephraim and Manasseh and Levi to be separate. Ephraim and Manasseh are separate and Levi is separate. For all 13 people all together. Really, I don't know what he does with the Malachim and Shemayim. The fact that Allah had it, but that's a pshat by Yashlichim in last week's parsha. They were thrown away. The big lamed stands for even when they're thrown away, they're still tremendous. They're still of milus because Moshe Rabbeinu gave them milus to be able to keep this around, to be able to stay that way for the rest of their lives. And that's by Yelech Moshe, that Moshe Rabbeinu went to all their levels as they were down there and to help them. And that's what it means. This stopped me to Mayon Sachachma. He knew that to get down to every Jew's level, to the lowest neshama's level, his neshama was so high he couldn't get there. He had to throw himself down. He had to lose his Mayanos HaChokma and teach them Aleph Beis, so to speak, and bring himself down there and say to them, guys, can you work with this, work with that? And by writing those Sifrei Torah, he brought himself through the Tochacha. He brought himself through Nitzavim. He brought himself through all the different problems that there were out there to be able to fix up everybody so that everybody would have a full tikkun at the end of the day.
Okay, how does that answer the question?
So what's the answer? What's the question? So the first question was, what did Moshe Rabbeinu do with the 13th Sifrei Torah? What was the point of him writing the 13th Sifrei Torah? It does not answer what the Malachim are doing in Shemayim. Rav Olson is trying to answer if what was the point of him writing Sifrei Torah on the day of his death? And the point of him writing the 12th Sifrei Torah, the 13th Sifrei Torah altogether, the point was to be able to be attacking those neshamos of the Jew. Yeah, but there's something missing here. Because what's with that 13th Sifrei Torah, this Sifrei Torah that's given over to the Malachim? That I haven't heard an answer to, and that would be appreciated by anybody here, but anybody who hears it online, just to be able to tell me if there's a pshat behind that. I have absolutely no idea. That's a pshat, by the way, in the end of this week's Parsha, he says, I want you to write down, I believe it's in Yud Ches.
But why is it a question as to why he's writing this?
Wait. V'atok kislu lechem es ha-shira hazos. Write down this shira. He calls Divrei Torah shira, a song. What's a pshat behind a song? Because it's like a symphony where everybody gets together and sings together. When it's one person singing, it's not a big, it's just a zemer. Okay, zemiros are good. But it's not the same thing as a shira. A shira is everybody together and everybody's put together. That the Sefer Torah can become a massive shira, a massive symphony with everybody working together. I'm sorry, yeah.
But why is that a big deal that why is it such a question of why he's writing the Sifrei Torah?
Why is it a question of why he's writing the Sifrei Torah? What would be the point? Why does the Medrash have to tell us what he did? And when did he have time to do it? And the fact that he did it, or he tells us that there must be a mila to writing it down.
Why does he have time to do it? And now, according to Wilson, he's actually doing more than just writing.
Yeah, more than just writing and be metaken. The fact is, by going to every Jew, that's by Yelech Moshe, by going to every Jew, he can see within the Neshamos everything that needs to be done. It's according to Wilson, it might not even be that it was a literal writing of the Sifrei Torah. Maybe it was just going over to every Jew and saying to them what they needed to know in order for them to be metaken and whatever. And that was Ki'ilu he was building up 13 Sifrei Torah for every one of Klal Yisrael. Although the literal pshat is definitely that he did something. When he did that, it has to be Ma'aseh Nisim. There's no question it had to be Ma'aseh Nisim. There's no way you could write that. What? 13 altogether. There's no way it could be done otherwise. Writing one Sifrei Torah takes a year. It's ridiculous to be able to say anything different. Like, yeah, to make a photocopy. Okay. Yeah, 100%.
Maybe the same thing was done with the Malachim. He's also clarifying for them
what their pshat is.
Their role is.
As if they need that. Do they need that? That should be the real kasha.
Well, the point is the Torah is written for people down here.
Right.
So the Malachim don't get the Torah. We get the Torah, and we can establish what the malachim's purpose is.
Okay, so that should be true through the Jews that are out there. So we won't need, once the Jews are clear, then the malachim won't need anything at all. That should be automatic. Let's fix up the Jews.
The malachim
are clear.
But when we talk about the malachim's role, it's through our interpretation of what the malachim's role is.
Yeah.
Not through the malachim's interpretation of what the malachim's role is.
Why do they have their own interpretation?
I don't know.
They shouldn't get anything. Don't give them anything. There's still they're omdim. We're going to talk about that in a second, actually. There is something regarding that. Also, to get back to that machlokas when Moshe Rabbeinu died. Okay, so we know Hashem and Malach. This is actually a very cool little thing. The Chassam Sofer, yeah, it's machlokas whether he died on Erev Shabbos, that's the Rosh, or if he died on Shabbos itself, which is the mashmos of Tzidkoscha, and the mashmos of the Gemara. So Hashem and Malach shnosem mitzadikim liyom liyom. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu fulfills the years of tzadikim from day to day, right? The problem is like this. Moshe Rabbeinu was born on Zion Adar. When did he turn 120?
Zion Adar.
No. And Zion Adar was the beginning of his 121st year.
You said this one before.
100%. The Vav Adar. It really should be Vav Adar. So what in the world do you do with this? So that's the famous question, right? So really, if he died on Zion Adar, that means he's 121. 121. So the easy answer is that he fulfilled, he went up to the second of when he was born. He was born on Mincha of Shabbos, on Mincha of whatever it was in Zion Adar, and he died on Mincha on Zion Adar. That would be the easiest way of looking at it. Chassam Sofer doesn't say that way. That's number one. Number two, Tzidkoscha, right? The Rosh says, how could he? He wrote Sifrei Torah on that day. Okay. Number three, what's the point in Nistat Mu'amenu? What does he need to lose all this stuff for? So it's Pharisee Onus and he used the Or HaChaim that we set up above. And he says the following. And the Or HaChaim was after the Tiferes Yonas and Rabbi Yonas and Ipshis, but he says like this: Erev Shabbos was his last day with his full neshama, 24 hours before he died, which means Mincha of Erev Shabbos, his neshama left him. Because your neshama leaves you 24 hours before you pass away. So when his neshama left him, that was on Erev Shabbos. And that was Kilu, a death for Moshe Rabbeinu. He no longer had Chachma. That was Kilu, like it was his complete death. He didn't have Torah anymore. The song that he sings, the Torah that he says, is unclear on this day. Hazinu. Nobody can figure out at all. We have no idea what he meant by that. Because neshama had already left him by the time he sang Hazinu. So on Erev Shabbos is when his neshama left him. That's when he died in spirit. But his goof left us on Shabbos during Tzidkoscha. On Shabbos during Mincha. That's the pshat of when that happened. That's the pshat that he really died at 120. When did he die at 120? He died at 120 on Friday. Because for all our Moshe Rabbeinu that we know and love, his neshama and everything that was with him died on Erev Shabbos. Therefore he died when he was 120. But when did his body actually die? When he was 121. That was on Zion Adar. And that's shot by every tzaddik. Every tzaddik who dies on their birthday really lives up to whatever year it is. It's mamalish no semi yom liyom. Aye, but they died in the beginning of the very next year. No. No, no, no. That means their neshama went away on the day that they became 120, on the day they became 70, on the day they became 80. But they died, their goof died on the next day. Yeah.
So, you die on your birthday, and they say, oh, you died on your 120th birthday. You really died on your 121st birthday?
You really died on the day that you became, you went into your 121st year. That's when you really died.
Didn't you do it from the Pasuk? Didn't you do it last year?
It's going to be four.
So they basically add another day.
Yes, by Yom Elayim, Bemeva Esrim Shana Anochi Hayom. I'm 120 years old today. So what day was that? Was that Friday or was that Shabbos? That's a big question. I mean, when he's saying, I am 120 today, you wouldn't lie, right? But he's 120 today. So the way that we answered was, last year we said, well, the years and the seconds added up to be exact where he died when he was exactly 120 years old. That's what we said last time. However, here's another vote altogether. It doesn't have to be that way. It could be something else entirely. The Chassam Sofer has a third answer. The Chassam Sofer's third answer is absolutely crazy, where he says every time it's off by 7 days because it goes by your bris. It doesn't go by your birthday. And really, you should have died in Yud Gimel Adar, but it worked out because it was a leap year. He has a whole cheshbon, and he figures it out based on what happened. It's a lot crazy, and that's what Rishat is. He's lost his neshama. Okay, we have this concept. I like this a lot. This is a really crazy board. Why do we bring kids to Hakel? Because later on it talks about Hakel, Pasuk Yud Beis, I believe. After he calls over Yoshua and everything, he says, "So Hakel is Alma Neshama Neshama Taf. You got to get the men, the women, and the children together, and you got to gather them all together and read the Torah to them." And they'll keep the Torah. The king is supposed to get everyone together and he reads the Torah in front of everybody. That's the mitzvah of Hakel. What is the point of bringing in the woman and the children? Why bring those people in? Why bring them in? So really, it's a Tosfos in Chagiga. Tosfos in Chagiga on Daf Gimel says that the minug to bring children to shul is based on this pasuk over here, that you bring children to Hakel. Why? Says Rashi, Litain Schar Lemiviehen. Here it is. Loma Bau, why did they come? Let's say Schar Lemiviehen. That's what the Gemara Chagiga says. To give Schar to those who bring them. You bring a child in, you get Schar for it. Svatam says Magdir this, though. The Svatam says, wait a second. It's not always that you get Schar for bringing children to Shul. Children make noise. And if children make noise, then you lose all the Schar that you're going to get because people's davenings are disturbed. So listen to this shot from the Svatam. If the parents bring their kids to Shul so that their kids see that they want to be around an environment of Kiddusha and Tara and Torah, and the parents show them this is what the Torah is all about, this is what davening and shul is all about, this is what the Kiddusha is all about, then with Siyata Dishmaya the kids are affected and the kids learn a tremendous lesson and they have Kiddusha imbued inside them from the fact that they're being brought to shul. But if the parent brings them to shul just to get them out of the hands of the mother, to do their mother a favor, for them to run around the shul and be able to do whatever they want, then the opposite effect happens. The kid learns that shul is all about having fun, running around, and eating, and doing whatever you want, getting a snack. Now sometimes that can be still be a good thing. With Siyata Dishmaya, it can still be a good thing. But without Siyata Dishmaya, without the right proper intention, says the Svat Samez, the worst thing can happen to the kid. The kid will lose the Kiddusha and the respect for the basic Knesses. Because he'll know, when I go to shul, I have a lollipop. He doesn't think I'm going to daven. He says, I know that when I go to shul, I get candy. When I go to shul, I can tell my father and I can run around the shul. That's what he starts thinking to himself. Says the Svat Samez, that's the pshat of what we don't want to happen. That's what we didn't allowed to happen in Hakel. The only kids that were able to come is if they were litein schar lemeviehen. If they gave schar to those who brought them, those kids that would learn from it, those kids that would get something from it, even if they were very, very young. But if you thought they'd be able to sit there and stay there and be quiet, that would be good. But if they're going for any other reason, not worth bringing them. Not worth bringing them. Do we hold that way? I have absolutely no idea. Obviously, you know, I bring my kids and I do put them in the groups and whatever it is. So I'm not so mocked about it, but it's a crazy Svas Emet. It's a very, very crazy. Just think about it. What do the kids think of when they think of shul? Do they think of davening and learning in Torah? Or do they think of run around, have candy, do whatever I want? That's the kasha. What do they think of when they have that shul in mind? When they say, I want to go to shul with you, Daddy, what are they thinking? What do they want with you? What do they want with that? That's the idea. Now, this statement was made by... What? Laffy Taffy. Now, this statement was made by Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said this statement in the Gemara, and it was two Talmidim that told it over to Rabbi Yoshua. They quoted Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, and they told it to Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua heard the statement. He said the following statement. He said, what's the word? Ein ador yosom, because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah shori besocho. The orphan, the nation is not orphaned. We're not missing a father because Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is our leader. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is there. Ashrecho Avram Avinu. Praiseworthy you are from Avinu, that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah came from your loins. What in the world is Rabbi Yoshua saying? Like, those are good accolades, you know, they're good praises. It's something you put in Askama at the beginning of a book. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah did not need the accolades of Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua was older and a tremendous Talmid Chacham in the Gadol. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was, but he was the Nasi. He doesn't need accolades from Rabbi Yoshua. So why does the Gemara mention what he said after? What do we need from that? So here we go. So I believe this is from a Chassam Sofer as well, though it might be from a Meshech Chachma, I'm not positive. What was Pshat in Avram Avinu? What did Avram Avinu do? So Avram Avinu never looked at Sarah Imenu. Never looked at Sarah Imenu. Why? Because he knew that he didn't want to have any extra Hana and Olahaza that he didn't need. He knew that he wouldn't need this. She said, it's not that big of a deal. Still, it's a crazy, crazy thing. Again, I'm getting this from the Abu Chatzera books. Those books are absolutely unbelievable. But I believe it was Rabbeinu Masud said, the woman that I'm going to marry, it doesn't make a difference to me what she looks like. You can give me anybody in the world. It'll fulfill my tafkid of getting married, and she has to be a tzaddikus and understands that I'm going to be learning Torah all the time. Rabbeinu David, Ateres Roshenu, stayed for 7 years in an attic with two other rabbanim, just sitting there. The only time they came out was to go to the mikvah. 7 years they did not come out. Except to go to the mikvah early in the morning. Very, very early in the morning. There was a minion that was next door and they opened up the windows. And they used to knock on the windows when they finished their Shemona Esrei. They would be able to tell. Nobody was allowed to look in. They weren't allowed to look out. They just sat and learned. They based it on something it's called Tshuva HaKanis. It's from Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. It's just absolutely poetic. Avraham Avinu was avave on that level. Avraham Avinu was beyond that level. And he knew that he didn't need to look at her. And even though Sari Minu was always Mutter to Avraham Avinu, she was never Anita. She was an islandess. She didn't have a womb. She never bled out of that area of her body. She was always Mutter to Avraham Avinu. So Avraham Avinu could have been together with her at any time, whenever he wanted, and it didn't make a difference. There's no question of Nida at all. And even though she was extremely beautiful, Chazal tell us. And Chazal tells us she was extremely beautiful. She was an islandess. Her body was a little bit strange. But aside from that, her face was extremely beautiful. Avraham Avinu didn't look at her until he saw her by accident through the river. By accident, he saw her through the river. What's pshat? Kept himself away for kadosh reasons, for kedusha reasons, he kept himself away. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said the exact same thing. Why do we bring the children? Litein schar lemiviehen. So that those who bring them can put the kids in between them and their husbands. So that the men are separated with the machitza from the woman. Now what do you need that for? It's the Beis HaMikdash. Nobody's thinking bad thoughts in the Beis HaMikdash. No man, when you're sitting in the Beis HaMikdash in front of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, with a constant miracle of the smoke going up and no flies, all the miracles that are going on there, no man is going to think to himself, that girl over there is cute. No man's going to do it. There were more impossible in the Beis HaMikdash.
In Shul, yes.
The Beis HaMikdash, no. The Beis HaMikdash, no. You don't have to mention your chatoim. But the fact is, there's no way that a person would have that thought. But the woman knew it, and anyway put kids in between. Why litin schar? To give a schar for separating even though they didn't need to. It was considered like a big conservative shul. They didn't need to do it, but they made a machitza anyway. That type of people are tzaddikim. That Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah darshan that way, he sees the schus of Klal Yisrael. To that he says, that's an unbelievable thing. We're not Yisomen. We have a father. We have Avraham Avinu as our father. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah is connecting us back to Avraham Avinu. But there's another thing. You ready for this? Massive lessons learned from women and children. This is good. What do we learn from women? So the Ben Ish Chai says like this. Women are mitztayer with pregnancy for 9 months. They're holding a bowling ball on their stomachs. The reason why Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't allow men to become pregnant is because Chazal knew that if we ended up having a baby in our stomachs, we'd punch ourselves until we got rid of it. There's no way you wouldn't be able to take it. You wouldn't be able to take it. To have this thing just on you at all times, to just keep growing bigger and bigger and bigger. Women, for some reason, take it. They take the pain, and they still do the whole house, and they still do this, and they still do that, and they take care of everything else that's going on. They still do everything without that much complaint. They complain, but without that much complaint. At the end of the 9 months, they push like crazy and try to fit through a tiny little hole a massive, massive baby. A massive baby. From 6 pounds to 10 pounds to 12 pounds, however much it is. I just saw that there was a baby that was born at 16 pounds. 16 pounds in Mexico. What? What?
12.6.
12.6? Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot. I mean, what did you say? What we're talking about? Just huge babies. Huge babies. And then after they go through literally almost death, after this thing that comes up to them, and they're still bleeding, and there's still cuts, and they have to be sewn up, and there's surgery that needs to be done sometimes, and all these things that are happening, they see this little baby that's born that looks like a little prune. Little prune, all wrinkled up, all bloody, all disgusting, everything, blue and everything. There's no good features on a baby. They put the little hat on him so it doesn't have so much of a cone head or whatever it is. But by any baby, it's not going to be it's not a very, very, it's never a really cute baby. Babies are not cute until after the first week is done, until after everything. The baby still, even though it caused the mother so much pain, you'd think the first thing the mother would do is slap it. That's what the doctor does. But you think she would do, what's wrong with you? You caused me so much pain, but no. First thing she does is she holds it. She says, you're my baby. She holds this withered little prune and holds it and says, you're my baby. And she loves it tremendously. The lesson to be learned is from those women to say, when you're learning Torah, it might be hard. There might be dochaking. There could be some things that are just pushing and you don't understand it. And the terutzim are not so easy to do. And you're pushing and you're pushing and pushing an answer and it just doesn't work. You're trying to fit it through and finally you're able to get something through and you come out with a chiddush. The chiddush could be a wrinkled old little prune. It could be a raisin. It could be something disgusting. But it's still my chiddush. The guy comes out and he says, I have a chiddush. That type of a thing, a person can look at and say, ah, I got something out of that. I really like this chiddush. And the person should still love that chiddush, even though it's the most disgusting in the world. That's what a person should do. To keep loving Torah, even though it's so hard. It's so hard to understand. It's so hard to come out with something. What in the world's going on here? That's what we learn from the mother. That's number one. Number two, from the kids. kids are never embarrassed. They'll run themselves into walls. They'll trip over themselves. They'll hit themselves. They'll go to the bathroom on themselves. They'll do anything they possibly want to do. They'll roll around in the dirt. They'll say things to people that no person would ever say. They'll say things to people. Just every single time. I still have a story from when I was a little kid that I was walking down Devon with my parents, and I saw two really big fat people right in front of me, and I said, one big tushy, two big tushy. Out loud, because of Sesame Street. My mom was mortified, absolutely mortified. But that's what kids do. Kids will tell you the absolute dead truth. They won't mince any words. They'll say exactly how it is. Whatever it is, they'll say exactly how it is. They're not embarrassed. So too, we shouldn't be embarrassed when we do mitzvahs. A person should never be embarrassed when you do a mitzvah. If it's embarrassing, keep your kippah on. If it's embarrassing, still do that mitzvah. It might be weird walking the shul with a lulav and an esrog, but the mitzvah is to walk with a lulav and esrog. I don't care what people are thinking when you're walking down the street, even if it's in downtown Manhattan. You go ahead and you carry that lulav and esrog and hold it up. Hold it high. Be proud about it. To walk around and say that. I'm walking home from Skokie Yeshiva across the street to the Holiday Inn. I'm walking home, and as I'm walking there, I'm standing in my suit and vest, because my Yom Tov vest, I have everything, and my hat, holding my kids who are all wearing Shabbos clothes, walking across the street. People are staring. People are honking. People are like, what are you wearing? Yeah, on a regular Monday, on a regular Tuesday, people are staring. What in the world is going on with these people? I don't care. It's my Yom Tov. Be proud of it. Be proud of it and say, this is what I want to do. That's the idea behind it. That's what a person should do. That's why we bring them to Hakel. We bring them to Hakel to say that when it comes to mitzvahs, number one, you got to love it. Number two, you got to do it well. That's the idea behind it. All right, we'll stop with that. Have a good Shabbos.